Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State Athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
Purple Project Podcast is on the airwaves once again. Eddie Greer III here with you, the host of this podcast, all about what is going on in K-State athletics and, of course, what's happening around the community here in Manhattan, Kansas. And, yeah, also, at some point during this podcast, we'll also like to take a look around what's going on in the community as well. There's just so much craziness going on outside of this community as well. That's just a whole nother podcast in itself right now that I'm not going to touch on right now, though. But what I'm going to touch on right now is the co-host of the Triple P, the Purple Project Podcast, here on this last day of May 30th, 2020, Alex Aiden coming from San Diego, California. What's going on, Double A?
Hey, Eddie, all is good. I spent my morning, since we recorded this, as you said, on Saturday, spent my morning watching the SpaceX rocket get shot into outer space with Bob and Doug, the two astronauts. So, as you mentioned, there's been a lot of negative news lately, so to see some good news today with the successful space launch, it's the first time in 9 years someone from U.S. soil has been shot in outer space. So some good historic news today. So that's how I spent my morning watching that. That was really cool. And now I'm ready to talk some K-State football.
Yeah, unfortunately I missed that launch there due to moving stuff out of my wife's old studio into the new studio inside the Manhattan Mall early this morning. So I had a busy morning doing that. Before that, went on a group run of 12 miles, so that was fun as well. So I did not, unfortunately, miss that, but yeah.
Well, I thought I was going to miss it because it was on Wednesday, and I was actually had meetings during that time, so I was like, well, you know, I'll miss it, but that's okay. So actually, when it got delayed, everybody was like, or got scrubbed, everybody was like, aw, it got scrubbed, and I was thinking, Saturday morning now, fine by me. Now I can actually sit down and watch this thing. So, but then they thought it would get scrubbed today too. The weather was, they called it marginal. So they, at first NASA was like, well, you know, there's a 50% chance. And I was like, oh, it's probably going to get scrubbed again and pushed till next week. NASA raised it to 70%. And then I was like, okay, they're probably going to do the same. And they were able to do it. And it was really, really cool. Fun fact, I'm not the biggest space nerd in the world, but it is interesting to see the first private, made by a private company, rocket go in outer space with people on board. So that was cool to see that piece of history, but I didn't think I'd get to see it. And so it was actually kind of nice to be able to catch that.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I know. Kate was telling me about that when I got home from picking up lunch and things like that. So I'm about to go back and check it out, hopefully, on YouTube somewhere.
There is any such thing as a 2020 space rocket, that would be it. That, you know, I remember the old ones. They used to be these, they almost looked like big planes that NASA made, and they were just these, I'm not going to call them clunkers, they weren't, but they were just really big. They had like thousands and thousands of switches inside. They looked like they were from the 90s. Granted, they were. I mean, well, you know, they were from the last time someone went up was 9 years ago. And then you get this one. It looks, it's all slick, and it's got all this modern technology. It's got the touch screens all inside the capsule. And so I was like, wow. You know, it's got the neon blue lights. I was like, that really is a 2020 spacecraft if I've ever seen one.
Yeah, we do live in a technology world nowadays now, so we have to try to get caught up on the latest technology, whether it's our cell phones or the latest laptop or, like you said, even the latest space shuttle. Yeah, we're living in a total different world So
when I get the laptop or phone, I'm like, oh man, how I can't figure this technology out. I can't even imagine astronauts. They're two veteran astronauts. I can't even imagine getting into the space shuttle being like, okay, well, let's figure this out because we are going to be driving this thing. So that's but honestly, I think it'll make their life a lot easier. It's a lot more automated than the last one, so it'll probably make it easier for them. But yeah, technology, it is always changing.
Yeah, and it's always changing, and yeah, I know we're getting off subject here, but yeah, I alluded to the craziness just moments ago, but yeah, man, just crazy with what happened in my home state, Georgia, with all the craziness that's going on right now. The College Football Hall of Fame was damaged earlier or yesterday, so it's been, at least from my end, again, like I said, I can go into a whole new podcast about it, but I'm not going to dig myself in that rabbit hole right now. But
yeah, you're right. I guess the only thing I would say to people is, you know, I hope that people stay safe. You know, listening, because that's the end goal. You know, we want people to be heard. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole too far, but we want people to be heard. But hopefully people can just, stay safe out there. And I see in Manhattan that there's been some protests, but they've been peaceful, so that's good to see. So, you know, hopefully that it continues down that trend there in Manhattan and around the rest of the world. Because, yeah, what happened in Atlanta, that was, and I'm sure you know, that it's probably close to home with you. Seeing what happened in Atlanta last night was pretty sad. And I heard the Atlanta mayor speak about it, and she pled for people to go home and some more peace there. And so we'll see what happens, but hopefully people just stay safe out there.
Yep, definitely, folks here, whether living in Manhattan or out there in California or anywhere you listen to this podcast, stay safe out there during this difficult time. You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast, Eddie Greer and my co-host Alex Aiden out there in San Diego, California. Kind of weird transition, but we're going to transition over to the football side. And I wanted to start off with the fans, obviously, and I'm probably going to talk about a little bit about shameless plug, but NASCAR obviously has, you know, the sport's been driven on, the NASCAR drivers been speaking out on this, the Chase Elliott's, the Kevin Harvick's, about the fans. They need the fans back. Obviously, this COVID-19 stuff really set us back, and I stumbled on something earlier this week. Iowa State, I believe it was, or I believe they set the president, they're going to at least have a, now I might be wrong about this, might not, but it was, they said they were going to do at least 50% capacity if we do have a college football season. I believe I'm accurate about that, and I know me and Kate talked about this a while back about how they're going to do the fans here in Manhattan when it comes to home games is concerned. Are they going to do, how's the process going to work? Are they going to have the long-time ticket holders go in first? Or how's that all going to work? How's that going to all that plays itself out? But yeah, college football in general, you know, is driven by the craziness of the student section and the hard, passionate fans, whether you cheer for K-State or Texas or OU or OSU or whatever. But Alex, get your take a little bit here. What do you think about Iowa State coming out with that, and what do you think or what should happen with K-State home games if we hope to get a football season here in the fall?
Yeah, well, you know, Eddie, it's really interesting to hear all these schools come out with, you know, their projections and what their plans are right now, because I've heard a handful, and you mentioned Iowa State and their plan of at least 50% in the stands. I heard Ohio State come out, and then they said something about possibly 20% as of now is what they were thinking, and possibly in a horseshoe. And then Iowa came out and said they plan for their stadium to be full as of now, and that they do have contingency plans in case that has to change. And so everybody's taking a little bit of a different approach to fans in the stands. And what makes it really difficult is we just don't know. You know, we just don't know what things are going to look like when 6th and September rolls around. And on that note, we don't know when Big 12 games will begin yet in the Big 12, because Commissioner Bob Boltby did come out earlier in the month, or maybe it was last month, but he did come out and say if we don't have things going in full steam by mid-July, well, we're going to have to push back the season. And so, you know, there's just so much unknown right now. And then just to throw another wrinkle in it, you know, with everything that's going on around the country right now, there are a lot of crowds that are dispersing through these protests. And I have heard some health officials say, you know, could it lead to a spike in the summer that we may not have had otherwise? That's still to be determined. We obviously don't know. We'll have to wait the coming weeks to see. But if it does lead to a spike, maybe that impacts the starting date. So there's just so much unknown. You know, we just have to wait and see what happens. It really gets tricky. I've heard a lot of K-State fans discuss, should I get tickets? Should I not get tickets? K-State's actually doing a really hard push trying to get people to get tickets right now. On it earlier this week, I went to their KStateSports.com, and I couldn't even figure out how to get off of, like, the promo, like, ticket page, because it was so prominent on the front, I couldn't even find the way to the regular site. I was like, oh my God, they really are trying to push this ticket thing. I can't even get to the regular site, hardly. And they were knocking it down as, like, you know, reserve your spot for as low as $25. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they're doing what they can to try to get people to buy tickets. But my gosh, how do you know whether or not to buy tickets right now? Because you just don't know what'll happen. You don't know when the games will be, where they'll be, who will be there. And if you buy tickets and there aren't games, you know, what will the refund processes look like? So there's so much and that you don't know. Eddie, correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't heard K-State come out with any concrete plans on, like, what they are planning as of yet with the crowds for football. So I guess we wait and see, unless they have said it and I didn't hear it. But I believe it's a wait and see. But, you know, I don't know. You know, I can't in my mind imagine a full stadium. I know that there's some that have come out and said that. It's really hard for me to picture full stadiums. I think it's more likely that they'll be completely empty than completely full, but I think the most likely thing is what you've discussed, is the reduced number of fans, I think it'll come down to those state guidelines. Each state has different guidelines on, okay, how many people are allowed in a business, how many people are allowed in a restaurant, whether it's 20% or 30% or whatever it might be. I think whatever those state guidelines are, I think there will be guidelines set from state to state with this is how many people can be in the stadium, and this is how it needs to be executed. And, you know, here's the screening checks. You know, people do the fever checks outside, and they got to wear a mask, and they got to be, you know, the seats are broken off in this way. And so, you know, I think that that's the most likely scenario that we'll see. But what does it do to the student section? You know, that's another great question, because you talked about that student section. There's been a lot of opponents that have come to K-State and talked about how much of an impact that makes on them, because the student section sits right on top of the opponent and their bench.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And it's a big home field advantage for K-State. Not one, because it's so big. They have such a big student section, but two, where it's located. So it's a huge advantage for K-State, and that's an advantage that they probably won't have. Maybe they do. But as of now, my guess would be they probably don't have it. So, you know, how will that work with students? We've got to wait to see. And then how will it affect the team? You know, if they're coming out and they're playing in front of no fans, or they're playing in front of a limited number of fans. So, man, it is hard to know what's going to happen. And I've got to think that K-State's got to have some sort of plan that they're going to unveil soon on this. And like I said, maybe they do, and I haven't caught it. But that's a tough call. That's a tough call for the fan to know what to do. I know for me, I'm not planning any trips to any games at the moment with the unknowns. And then, to go one step further, Eddie, how comfortable are fans going to the games? That's a whole other discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Some may be like, ah, look, they're allowing it, but I'm not willing to go. It's kind of like me in restaurants. I love going out to eat. and go into restaurants. I consider myself a foodie, I'll be honest. But I'm just not to the point right now where I think here in San Diego, I don't feel like the risk is worth the reward of going out to a restaurant. I do feel like the risk is worth the reward, however, going to get my hair cut, as if you caught last week, which they're now allowing in San Diego. So, it's the risk versus reward. How comfortable are people taking that risk of going out to a game? And the only way you really can know is probably looking at those ticket sales, which we don't have access to that, but the university does. They know where that stands, and it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, especially in these coming weeks when more information becomes available.
Yeah, I mean, and oh yeah, P.S. by the way, yeah, I got my hair cut yesterday, so we talked about that last week.
Yes, we did.
So,
I'm off on my head right now.
So yeah, I couldn't wait. I couldn't do it. I couldn't wait another week. I had to do it. So
yeah, I don't blame you. I am chomping at the bit. On Monday is when California allowed San Diego County to go into the begin phase three as like a pilot program, essentially, since San Diego's in a pretty good spot right now, and hair salons was one of them. And I was like, oh, I'm so pumped about this. Yeah, but I didn't want to bombard my hairstylist, so I was like, okay, I'm going to give her the week to get her ducks in a row, and then I'll, if she doesn't hit me up or text me within the first week, then I'll hit her up the second week and be like, hey, so are you open now? I'm free to make an appointment to come in, so that's on my list in the coming days.
Yeah, we just went off the rails there for a little bit, that's my bad, but
anyway, no, you're good.
Back over to what I was going to say before I did that was, yeah, I was playing around, or before I hopped on this podcast, was the K-State Sports website, and I couldn't get off of it either, just because they had promoting their tickets. So yeah, I found that pretty interesting, that aspect. To your point, other point, Alex, I have not heard anything from K-State Athletics or Gene Taylor about, you know, how much they're going to let in or how they're going to do the fans, at least not yet. But hopefully, I know that we're approaching summer here pretty soon, so maybe we'll hear something this summer about how they're going to approach it, or if or when the Big 12 commish makes an announcement or whatever. But yeah, that's interesting that you brought up a couple of those schools already making their plans known about how many fans, how much fans they're going to bring in to their football stadium. Iowa State, not Iowa. You said Iowa is bringing their, was going to be full, you said?
Iowa from the Big Ten, the Hawkeyes.
Okay.
They said that their plan as of now is to have full stadiums for games, and that they do have contingency plans in place for reduction of that if health officials ask them to. But as of now, they are planning to pack the stadium full. So, and you know, there's probably other schools that are proceeding that way. The NFL's proceeding that way. The NFL came out this week and they said, we're proceeding to play all games in full stadiums, and we have contingency plans in place. Same type of thing as Iowa. So, who knows? Maybe that's K-State's plan right now. I mean, we just haven't heard. I did hear this morning, I did get an email with a message from President Myers, which was sent to the Alumni Association, and he talked about some things they were doing, but he didn't mention anything about the sports. So
yeah,
it's still to be determined. But yeah, Iowa, as of now, they're planning on full stands, and like you said, Iowa State, it sounds like they're planning 50% capacity as of now.
Yeah, in K-State, you know, putting COVID-19 aside, looking at the NASCAR races since they started back up, you know, for me, it started off a little weird, you know, not seeing, you know, almost a packed grandstands, you know, at Darlington, or even this past week at all those races that were held at Charlotte this past week. And thankfully, they got those all in. They've been battling rain for the last couple weeks on that side
Yes, they have.
Like, ruthlessly, but thankfully they got it all in. But yeah, like, K-State, Bill Snyder Family Stadium, one of the more timid places to play. Yeah, you need you need that crowd support, that student support, obviously, one of the more raucous atmospheres in all of the Big 12. So you need that, and also, and obviously you have hardy fans that travel north, east, south, west to get to this place here, here in Manhattan, and they pack it. And what also, what I've been thinking about lately is, and this is this tacks along with the whole, you know, how much they can let in, is the tailgating things of that nature. You know, like, obviously, you know, K-State is well known for tailgating and the atmosphere that is brought along, that game day atmosphere, you know, the hot dogs, the whatever, the hamburgers, hot dogs, whatever you're going to cook that weekend. And it just, it sets up for a good college football experience, you know what I'm saying? So
it does. And you know what, that's a great point. Look, you K-State, they know how to tailgate. You know, you're only 2 hours from Kansas City, which is the best tailgating team in the NFL, Eddie. The best tailgating, if you want the best tailgate in the NFL, you go to Kansas City, you go to Arrowhead. Oh my gosh, it is unreal. I had season tickets there growing up, and it was just, tailgates were amazing there. And it rolls over 2 hours down to Manhattan, Kansas for the K-State games. I've been to a handful of tailgates there. They are an absolute blast, it's a lot of fun. But that does bring another, essentially it's another layer to this entire crowd thing. And it's not just, when you talk about people in the stands, it's not just, okay, well, let's think about how many people are going to be sitting in their seat. I mean, it goes so far beyond that. You know, how does, you know, the bathroom situation work, sharing bathrooms with all those fans? How does the concessions work, sharing all the concessions with all those people? How about the tailgating and all the interacting that goes on outside of the stadium before they come in? You can police some of that, but you can't police all of that. And so that it just creates more layers that makes this entire fan experience and this fans in the stands thing that much more complicated, because you got to work through all those different layers and then figure out, okay, how do we do this? How do we put the proper systems in place to handle these? And tailgating is absolutely an additional layer because, you know, as you know, at K-State, a lot of people aren't even tailgating on K-State They are tailgating on K-State property.
Yeah.
They may not be tailgating on the veneer complex. They may be across the street over in the ag department, where the ag school is, and be tailgating on their property. So, you know, you can't police all of that. You know, you just can't do it. I mean, you could send campus police around and try to alleviate it there, but, I mean, there's just only so much you can do. So a lot of layers, and tailgating is just an extra layer where you people are interacting and they're sharing things. And it's a complicated issue, Eddie. It is a really complicated issue. And to be 100% honest, I don't know all the answers and how to handle it, to be honest. And I'm glad I'm not one of the people that has to make those decisions, because those are not easy decisions to make. It's hard enough to figure out how to play games where football players can be interacting with each other and stay safe. I can't even imagine having the element of the fans and having to make those decisions.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yeah, Alex, I don't want to be one of those people that are in charge of making that whole entire decision there. I'm going to leave that up to the Big 12 and K-State, how they're going to handle it. But yeah, we'll monitor that situation, go forward, and if I do hear something, we'll definitely talk about it on the Purple Project Podcast. That is for sure. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, Troll P is on the airwaves on the final Saturday of May, as we're recording this right now, I'm here in Manhattan, Kansas, obviously, with my co-host Alex Aiden out in San Diego. Switching gears, finally, we're almost 25 minutes in, and we have not talked about the defense. So last week, We talked about the offense and Skylar, a little bit about the offense, Skylar Thompson and Chris Klieman. I want to shift the focus over to last year's defensive effort, and my oh my, well, fresh change can make a difference with that K-State defense. You know, back in the day, you know, with old Tom Hayes, the old defensive coordinator, these prevent defenses, especially on third down, giving up yards after yards, play, big play after big play, it just got really frustrating. But last year, bringing, of course, Chris Klieman, bringing on Scotty Hazleton after Ted Monachino was hired. Originally, he was hired as K-State defensive coordinator, but then, like, I guess a day or two later, he went on to take the Chicago Bears job, defensive coordinator position, and Chris Klieman reaches in his bag of tricks, hires Wyoming's Scotty Hazleton as defensive coordinator, and what a difference it made for that K-State defense. You saw more blitzing, more aggressiveness from that defense, and the defense kept the K-State in majority of these games, and obviously this defense, you know, we're talking about last year's defense, obviously not this year's defense, not yet anyways, but last year's defense, 2019 K-State Wildcat defense. I was looking over some of these stats over the week, and they finished top half, not even top half, they finished second, according to the Big 12 stats, to Baylor. Second overall defense there. Alex, you know, what were your thoughts overall on this defense last year that really made a difference in some of these games last year?
Well, Eddie, first off, I'm a little disappointed you stole my first statistic I was going to share.
Oh, my
no,
bad.
No, I'm totally kidding. Your show, Eddie, you share what you want. You brought up a great point. K-State was, to read off a couple statistics, K-State was second in total defense last year in the Big 12 just behind Baylor, and we all know how good Baylor was last year, so no shame in that. K-State only gave up 21.5 points a game last year. We all know how explosive the Big 12 is.
Yeah.
21.5 points per game playing in the Big 12 is nothing to sneeze at. That is a good number. And then you're like, okay, well, maybe points is a little deceiving. So let's see how K-State was in total yards per game. They were still top half. They were fifth, and they gave up 364 yards per game. Once again, nothing wrong with that in the Big 12, giving up 364 yards a game, falling in the middle of that category. That's good enough. You know, that's that good enough. So this K-State defense was, they were much improved, and you really saw a different philosophy on defense. It was funny that you mentioned Tom Hayes. I remember my senior year of college. It was my final semester, actually, of Wildcat World of Sports on the Wildcat 91.9. It was fall semester because it was the very end of the football season. But had Blake Slaughter on the show. If anybody remembers him, he was the year prior was his senior year at K-State.
Oh, wow, man.
He was one of the captains on the defense. He was a linebacker.
How did I not remember him? That's a good refresher.
Yeah, Blake Slaughter. That's right. He's famously known for redshirting that sophomore year when K-State, my sophomore year in 2012, when K-State made the big run and almost went to the national championship,
mm-hmm.
he could have played a significant amount of snaps and ended his career on that note, but he intentionally redshirted that year to be able to stay one extra year when K-State was going to go through the quote-unquote rebuild and be able to be a captain and lead that team and play a bigger role. So kind of famously known for that. But anyway, he was on the show my senior year. It was the week before they played Baylor. And that game was for the Big 12 title. If K-State would have won it, they would have been able to win the Big 12. And so I had him on, and we were talking a lot about Tom Hayes and his defensive schemes. And you're right, it was a lot of sit back, 10 yards of cushion, it seemed like, on the field. between it, and we talked a lot about those coverages, and look, it's what Tom Hayes liked to do, and look, Blake Slaughter liked to do it too. You know, obviously, I had a lot of respect for Tom Hayes, but we talked about some of the downfalls, pitfalls of that could bring. And unfortunately, we saw it in that K-State Baylor game that year, and then Baylor went on to win it, and they actually didn't make the college football playoff. That's a whole other story. Denver TCU, I don't know how they, to this day, I still don't know how one of them got in, but you did see it in that game, and then you bring in Scotty Hazleton, and you're right, you know, it's a lot more aggressive defensive approach, you know. We saw Wyatt Hubert do a lot of really good things for K-State last year. He was tied for second in the Big 12 in sacks, and there was just a lot more pressure. There's a lot more disguise on the defense. Saw some big things from Elijah Sullivan around that linebacker. You know, I really wasn't sure when James Hughes was out for the year. He got Justin Hughes, excuse me, was out for the year with injury. Didn't know what that was going to mean for K-State because he was expected to play an integral role there. But K-State was really able to put some stuff together to kind of cover up that loss. That's just, look, that's a sign of a good coaching staff, you know, a good coaching staff that knows what they're doing. So to be able to have that type of production was huge. Obviously, Scotty Hazleton talked about them giving up too many big plays and how they needed to cut that down. And they do need to continue working on cutting that down, those down. But at the same factor, on the same token, when you play in the Big 12, you're going to give up some big plays. You know, there's just so much offensive firepower in the conference that's going to happen. And I think it's also important to note that K-State's offense did not help K-State's defense
out.
Anyways, the K-State defense too many times had to go on the field after a three and out, still gasping for air from the defensive possession before. And they bailed out the offense time and time again. That defense didn't get to just rest for, you know, 10, 15 minutes on that sideline and then go back after. They had to be on the field a lot and bail that offense out a lot. And quite frankly, K-State finished 8-4 in the regular season in large part to the defensive effort. The defense was definitely the strength of the team last year.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, we didn't mention this last week, but K-State in the conference offensively was eighth in the second half, almost the bottom of the Big 12. I know we're going sidetrack here, but you know, eighth in offensively in the Big 12 with, you hear the old saying, defense wins championships, right? Okay, so K-State offensively, yeah, this upcoming year, hopefully, Skylar Thompson, you're a senior. He's got some weapons coming back. We'll talk about that all coming up this summer, leading up to the fall, obviously, here in the Purple Project podcast. Yeah, they're going to need to step it up a notch. Obviously, they got weapons coming back. Young blood, Malik knows if he's able to stay on the field. You have good talented running backs coming back. And also, obviously, you have rising stars in Jarcadia Wright and Joe Irving. But yeah, we touched on it last week, the questions on the offensive line. But yeah, there's talent there on the offensive side. And you only last year you finished eighth. This upcoming season, again, hopefully they can do better than that. I mean, there's weapons. The talent is there. Obviously, Chris Klieman hasn't had all of his guys recruited just yet. This is still some of his guys still, like Skylar Thompson is still Bill Snyder's recruit. But there's too many times you mention it, defense bailed out the offense there, making mistakes there. In the offense, they're going to need to cut some of those out as well to help out the defense a little bit there. But yeah, defensively, K-State really took a step forward, and hopefully we can see that again. You mentioned Wyatt Herb Hubert just a moment ago, Alex, and you let me perfectly transition to my next point with Wyatt Herb Hubert. Tied for second with sacks with 7. And also, tackles for loss in the Big 12, he was ranked 7th in that. Wyatt Hubert has been an absolute stud since coming to Manhattan from Topeka, Kansas. the ceiling, I don't think we've seen the best yet of Wyatt Hubert. He's only getting better and better each every year.
Oh yeah, we haven't seen the ceiling for Wyatt Hubert at all. I mean, you know, he really kind of had his breakout season last year, if that's what you want to call it. And he was in the backfield a lot. He was in the backfield disrupting plays. You know, it may not have been a sack every single time, but he was sure pushing the quarterback out of the pocket, or he was blowing up a running run play, or whatever it might be. He was just really disruptive. And you touched on it last year. He was only a sophomore. So, you know, you figure, you know, you got two more years of Wyatt Hubert.
Yeah, two more years.
He's going to continue to grow, continue to evolve, and be an integral part of this this defense. Now, I would assume that in coming years, he'll probably see more double teams. He'll probably see more, attention, I guess you could say, get more attention, from offensive linemen and tight ends and things like that that are trying to double him. But that's also going to create more opportunities for other guys on the defensive line to make plays. And we saw last year when Wyatt Hubert did get some additional attention from time to time, other guys on the line made plays. And so, you know, that's going to be the key. You know, I know we saw Bronson Massey, make some plays when Wyatt was getting a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that Bronson Massey could be in for another big year, especially if Wyatt Hubert gets even more attention. So I think it's got a nice little thing going on with their defensive ends there. Kind of excited to see how that plays out, because they're both quality guys. Wyatt Hubert's obviously the big name, but I really think Massey can make plays if they're going to just give all the attention to Hubert. And if they try to play him straight up, then Wyatt Hubert's going to beat you. So,
yep.
Having those bookend defensive ends is a really big thing. Makes a defense it's just so vital to a defense's success. And so Chris Kleiman has got some, I guess you could call them, toys, I guess, in his bag that he can use, and kind of excited to see what he does with them there. And then another thing, we obviously know that K-State's Joe Klanderman is now the defensive coordinator, and I think he's going to do a nice job in that role, and so he'll be able to use them. I think he'll use them similar to the place that Scott Hazleton used them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm eager to see what Wyatt Hubert does and what that defensive line does.
Yeah, and also helps when a year ago you had Jordan, I had it on a sheet here, there we go, when you have Jordan Mitty last year do what he did in Trey Deshaun last year.
Trey Deshaun had a big year. He had a big year. He made some big plays. Like, it felt like when he made plays, it was at big moments in games. You know, his big disruptive plays and sacks and things like that just seemed to come, like, when K-State needed a play. And so, there's a lot of talent. There's just a lot of talent when you look at the defensive tackles and the defensive ends. And we talked about it. This team, you know, it did lack some talent last year, but there were nice things on that defensive line, and the staff was really able to kind of maximize the talent there. And so they'll see if they can do it again.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Yeah, Alex, definitely interested in seeing what Wyatt Hubert and company will do coming up in this football season, and we'll definitely talk about it even some more. But going back, you mentioned Joe Klanderman. So Scotty Hazleton now leaves for a huge promotion. Well, not, I should say promotion, my bad. That's a bad word. Not the word I want.
He usually was promotion.
Well, yeah, yes.
In
money, as well. Went to Michigan State a couple months ago, took the defensive coordinator job up there, and then a couple of days later, Joe Klanderman, it did not take long for K-State and Chris Kleiman to fill that role, like you mentioned, Joe Klaiman. This is going to be his second stint as defensive coordinator ever for Joe Klaiman there. So, and he said on Twitter, I believe it was on Twitter a while back, that he is, like you said, he's planning on doing the same thing, and he's planning on probably taking up another notch. So that's got to be good for K-State fans moving forward.
Well, Eddie, you know, if you would have listened, you know, I'm listening to Chris Klaiman talk about this once the move was made, and he said, you know, Joe Klaiman is as prepared as anyone for this type of role, and he said Joe Klaiman could have stepped in and been our defensive coordinator last year, and he said I would have been totally comfortable with it and had all the confidence in the world, and he said now he's just got another year under his belt, and he knows our system, and he knows what we want to do, and he's one of the most prepared people that he knows, and so for Coach Klaiman to say those types of things about Joe Klaiman gives me plenty of confidence that he's going to come in and do a fine job there. And then obviously you got Van Belone. Many people grab like Van Belone. You know, you got him to helping Joe Klaiman on the defensive side.
Yes, sir. Yep.
I think K-State is set on the defensive side. It stunk to see Scotty Hazleton go because you know he just had a great year in his first season with K-State, and so it would have been nice to see what he could have done in a year or two. Could K-State have, you know, improved those numbers that they had last year, second total defense in the Big 12? Could they gotten even better? Very well, they could have under him. But you know what? You can't fault him for making a move. That's just part of the business. So, you know, K-State moves on, and I think Joe Klaiman's, he's going to come in. He's going to run a lot of the same things that Scotty Hazleton did. Maybe he even dials things up a little more. Joe Klaiman and Van Malone they're going to do it. I'm just absolutely zero worry for me on what they're going to do. You know, also heard them a little bit talk about it, they're going to step in and they're going to man this defense, and you know, who knows, maybe we're having a whole different conversation about this late in the season. Oh my gosh, look, defense is not performing. What happened to Scotty Hazleton? You know, maybe that is what happens, but I don't think that's the case. I think that they're going to come out, and I think that they're going to replicate kind of what they did last year, hopefully even improve on it.
Yeah, I'm in that camp as well with Scotty Hazleton. I would have loved to see him at least would have stayed another year. I mean, their coaching staff was intact, and all of a sudden, you know, Michigan State offers a whole bunch of money, and yeah, I mean, it's part of the game, like you just said, but yeah, it would have been interesting for me as well to see how he would have done in his second year with the kind of the surprising movement that this K-State is projecting right now. But yeah, Klaiman, and you mentioned Van Malone. I love Van Malone. They're gonna do some work.
They are. Eddie, you know, I just want to say quickly, another reason this is a big deal, and I mentioned this last week with Skyler being a senior quarterback and how important it was to have somebody who's a senior and a leader at the quarterback position during this time where teams can't practice and there's all this uncertainty. So, you know, that'll help K-State's offense because things are intact, and there's not like a lot of new things that they have to learn, and they have somebody who's a veteran and experienced leading the offense. When you flip it to the defensive side, you lose a coordinator right before all this happens, this COVID stuff happens, and you're not bringing in somebody from the outside who's going to have new installs for the guys, right, and new schemes and things like that. You're just promoting a guy that these players know, that these players respect, and a guy who has schemes that the players already know, and no new installs need to be made. Or if there are new installs, it's not going to be anything that's going to just dramatically change what they're doing defensively. So it's going to help keep kind of the continuity on defense. And I think all year, from football ranging from high school all the way through the NFL, I think continuity is going to be the name of the game for all these schools, all these teams, because the teams that have those continuity are probably, in my opinion, going to be the ones that make it farthest, because it's just going to be the easiest to make that transition. So it's just another way for K-State to keep that continuity on defense and make the make that transition during this kind of unknown time.
Yeah, definitely. You touched on that. Definitely with the continuity, it's going to be huge, especially with all the COVID-19 stuff and not being able to get on the field for our spring practice. And we touched on a little bit last week that at the end of the episode there, it was made official again this week that players will start to come back or allow to come back June 15th. That is going to be huge to get themselves kind of in that mojo, in that rhythm, to get themselves ready to go for when this season actually starts. And, you know, you lose Hazleton, but you still have Justin Hughes back and hopefully better than ever. I call Justin Hughes the AKA grandfather of the defense. And the way that Chris Kleiman said it last year, I mean, he's the heart and soul of this defense. That had to meant something there for every K-State fan, especially within that locker room. So you talked about Skylar Thompson and his experience. Now you flip it. You have Justin Hughes with all that experience, especially coming off of what he did in 2018, rolling. And then all of a sudden, Heartbreak Hotel happened, and he had another serious, with not even a snap there, with an ACL injury there that derailed his supposedly senior season. But he got the waiver, and he is back again for K-State. How big, I mean, you talked about him a little bit earlier in this episode, Alex, but how big and important Justin Hughes is important to K-State's defense?
First off, feels like he's been there for like 10 years. I mean, it feels like he's just been a K-State forever. But, so the grandfather analogy is a bit you're right, I alluded to it earlier. You know, when he got hurt last offseason, you were just like, oh no, like, man, he was the leader of this defense, new coaching staff, and then he goes down, oh man, this could be a rough go for this K-State defense.
This is going to be a long year.
It's a long year defensively, and then K-State, like I said, they were able to make it work. So now you're going to be able to pair an Elijah Sullivan and a Justin Hughes together at the linebacker level, sort of that second level on defense. And so we talked about the front, you know, having Massey and Hubert, and being able to add Justin Hughes there with Sullivan on that second level. I think it just makes your defense just that much more dangerous. He is heart and soul. He was the captain of that defense, and you lost it, and you did what you did without it. So with him coming back, you know, it's going to make the defense just that much better. K-State's going to be able to do more things defensively. Maybe we see some more. I don't know exactly how they'll disguise things with those linebackers, but, you know, maybe we see some more linebacker blitzes. Maybe we see some more, maybe we see some better coverage on guys, running backs that are trying to use that speed sideline to sideline. Maybe you'll see some better coverage of tight ends, you know. I mean, maybe it'll just be interesting to see kind of what that will do at the linebacker level because, you know, it'll make things easier. It'll make it easier for K-State to be able to handle, like I said, the tight ends, those running backs, some of that speed, that especially the sideline speed the guys like Chuba Hubbard at Oklahoma State can present. Remember when he went up against K-State last year at the Oklahoma State game? How many yards he got on the ground?
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, quite the game. K-State did not have the speed, especially at the second level, to deal with them. Yeah. Maybe a game like Oklahoma State is where you can see the Justin Hughes effect really, really kind of pop out of the screen. You know, just thinking off my head, maybe that's one. Because that was one game where you could see kind of the K-State linebackers get exposed there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it can be huge in games like that. It's just going to be interesting to see how they use him because they can use him a lot of different ways. And the only way to really know is when they take the field. And we haven't been able to see K-State take the field because they can't. They haven't been able to do spring ball. And they haven't been able to do their off-season stuff. So by now we would probably know a little more on how K-State was planning on utilizing some of those defensive weapons, including Justin, but we just don't know, so we'll have to see. But all I know is it can be, it only can mean good things, because he's one of the best players from a talent level on that defense, and he is also, without a doubt, a leader of that defense. He was in the middle of that defensive battle every game last year in the sweatpants, and so being able to be in the middle of that huddle, actually suited up, and then leading them on the field, like I said, only can mean good things.
Yes, and going back on that OSU game, Chuba Hubbard, 296 yards on the ground, and you lose there by 13 points, 26-13, and still are there. Yeah, they were not ready to handle that. And the bad news for them, Chuba's back with that offense of
OSU. Why didn't he go to the NFL? Why, Eddie?
What? I don't know. Maybe you should ask his PR person or whatever. But
I don't want to deal with him again. Oh, gosh, he ran near 300 yards.
Yeah, he tore us up. Yeah,
that's. I want to shout out real quick, because I know somebody who's going to be listening to this is former K-State running back Ethan Valentine, because I had him on many times in Wildcat World of Sports. We talk all the time, and I convinced him to listen to the podcast, and so I know he'll be listening, and so. So he's probably going to be sitting here. Like, why hating on Chuba? You know, why are you hating on him? You know, it's running backs. It's all about the running backs. Well, you know what? You know, let him go do his running back thing in the NFL. You know, I don't need to see him tear K-State up again. That was just, I swear, like, Chuba got the ball. I just went like 80 yards, like every play. I was like, he didn't literally go 80 yards every play, Eddie. That is it. That is me. Being dramatic, but you get the point. It was, I just watched the game, and you just knew what was going to happen. So, moral of the story, hopefully Justin Hughes can come in and slow down guys like Chuba, and hopefully, Keith and, I'm curious, maybe we have Keith and Austin. I'm curious to see how many yards he would have been able to rush on K-State's defense that game, because he told me in the KU game, he said, I could have rushed rank 125 on KU's defense. I'm curious to see how many yards he thinks he could have rushed on K-State that game. But getting back to the actual point, I think we're going to see those numbers in general go down, the amount of rushing yards that K-State gives up. I think they're going to be better equipped to handle those running backs. They're still going to get their yards, but I think K-State's going to be better equipped to slow them down. Because they're going to have more experience, they're going to have more veteran leadership, and quite frankly, there should just be a little more talent on all three levels. And if there's more talent on all three levels, that's gives you a higher likelihood of reducing those big plays.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, Elijah Sullivan. Wow, that's a tongue full to say. Yeah. Leading tackler, 65 tackles, 46 of them solo, and you get Justin Hughes back on that defense, linebackers. That's a second level for you, and you got to give also kudos there here real quick before we transition to the last topic of this episode. Wow, there's going to be a lot to talk about with football. But Daniel Green, linebacker, coming in, filling in for Hughes. He was the unsung hero. I mean, he came up with some big plays throughout the year last year. There, he 33 tackles, 17 solo. There, had 2 sacks, and yeah, 3 pass breakups for Daniel Green there. And yes, he had his flaws last year, but I felt he did a nice job filling in for Daniel for Justin Hughes there. So,
hey, yeah. Look, he was a freshman last year. And
I believe that's right.
Yeah, and for him to step in and to do what he did was a big deal. You know, and it's just amazing. I'm looking through their defense, and there's just so many guys that stepped in that were freshmen, and it just makes you really encouraged for the future, because you're just like, oh man, you know, that was a freshman who stepped in. Oh, he was a freshman who stepped in. We'll talk about the secondary, I'm sure, later. But, you know, looking at what Dino Green did, I mean, for him to step in that role to do that was huge. And I'm sure that he, you know, Justin was in his ear a lot, you know, helping him out through that year. So being able to actually play with him is just going to make Daniel Green that much better. And then, you know, when Daniel Green becomes an upperclassman, Skies could be the limit for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that if anything, this injury to Justin Hughes, as unfortunate as it was, one, kind of make K-State's defense better this year. And two, it probably progressed the timeline on Daniel Green for the impact that he would have. So I think it's going to make Daniel Green better. I think it's going to make the defense this year better. You never want to wish an injury on anyone, and I wish it didn't happen, and I wish he was part of the defense last year. But there's no doubt that it's going to benefit K-State, and I definitely think it is going to benefit in the progression of Daniel Green, because I think he's better now than he would have been otherwise, and I think he'll be even better being able to play another year next to Justin Hughes. So.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden for the Purple Project Podcast. Last topic of this episode. I'm here in Manhattan, Kansas, while Alex is out living up in San Diego, California, out there. And we'll talk about this guy maybe on the next episode, but to kind of put a pin on this awesome episode, great content again for you guys here on the Triple P, A.J. Parker. We talked about the front end, the second level, and now we'll talk just a little bit about the back end, in particularly A.J. Parker. Alex, I don't know, and this probably is much in due to Van Malone again, but A.J. Parker was just a different dude. I mean, back at his time here, we saw this guy get beat on numerous occasions, get beat continuously, play after big play after big play. But last year was a whole different story, and A.J. Parker came up in huge in multiple games. I mean, this was just a different – he just had a different mindset, and to lose A.J. Parker late in the season – was absolutely devastating in the backfield. Yes, we have depth in the defensive backfield, which again we'll touch on that a lot more this summer. But losing A.J. Parker was gigantic for his K-State defense. But the whole 180 with A.J. Parker was tremendous, and we saw A.J.'s confidence rise up. And to me, the signature play for me, and it all goes back to the OU game. Interception there late in the first half, almost returning for a touchdown. Man, the dude, he was balling last year.
He was, and you know, he kind of reminded me of kind of thinking back to when I was at K-State, some of the corners that I got to watch, and kind of what David Garrett did in his time, and then Nigel Malone did, and then also Chapman did. You know, they really did some, you know, they were corners that were really, really active, out kind of on the boundary. And they weren't just guys that were, locking a guy down, and they weren't throwing at him. I mean, they were legit breaking up passes, making plays, you know, making the quarterbacks, forcing the quarterbacks to make perfect throws, because of their coverage. And A.J. Parker, he took a huge step, and he turned into a really disruptive corner. And you mentioned the interception that he had in OU game. It came at just a huge point late in the second quarter, if I recall correctly.
That's, yep, and mm-hmm, yep.
Sat K-State up to get the lead going into the locker room, and that was huge. That was a turning point in that game. And yes, a part of it was him being, you know, in the, you know, in the right place when that ball came his way. But look, that's half the battle right there. You know, having yourself in the right position, because you know we see corners out of position a lot. That's not necessarily uncommon thing to see, and unfortunately it's something that we saw from AJ Parker a little bit in his first couple years at K-State. Was not necessarily in the right position, so being in the right spot is half the battle. But he made a lot of plays. He really took his game to the next level, and he made K-State that much better. And you're right, you know, you have him, and then you're able to kind of pair him with Walter Neal, you know, and so K-State's gonna have a couple seniors. So we talked about, you know, having being more seasoned on defense this year, just going to have that much more experience back there. And then you're able to pair that, and I know we're going to talk about this more in depth later in shows, but you're able to pair that with a couple of freshmen in Lance Robinson and Wayne Jones, who played well last year at times mm-hmm. when they had to step in. And so those are guys that are going to be sophomores. So it's looking, you know, things looking really promising for them in the secondary, but it all starts with AJ Parker. And I think that we all know that. Is he going to take the next step? Is he going to go above what he did last year? That's what I'm eager to see. Is he going to turn into he turned into a above average corner last year. You know, he turned into a really good corner. Is he going to take the step to a great corner? You know, and if, thinking back, you know, we saw, like I said, I saw a guy like Nigel Malone my freshman year, really good corner. His sophomore year, he became a great corner. Can AJ Parker follow that trajectory? And I think he can. I absolutely think he can. I think he's got the right mindset. I think that he's a leader as well. And look, I tell people there's a fine line. For those defensive backs, from a lot of people are like, man, why are they so, you know, so cocky? You hear all the jokes about, you know, corners who may have bad coverage and a receiver doesn't get the ball because the ball's overthrown, and the corner's like, you know, all showing off, like, oh yeah, you like the play I just made? Yeah, you did nothing to affect that play. What are you bragging about right now? You see that all the time on the football field, because look, corners, they gotta have. They got to have that kind of confidence. They got to have that swagger, you know. You've got to have that mindset when you're one-on-one with the receiver going down the field and you're trying to lock them down. And you've got to have that mindset. You can't – maybe you don't have that kind of that swagger, that cockiness, that chippiness of the corner position. You're just probably not going to be a successful corner. And AJ Parker's got that. He's got that kind of confidence bordering on cockiness, but not cockiness, if that makes sense, with that fine line. So he's got the mindset. He's got the tools. He's got the coaching staff around him to help him succeed. So let's see what he does in another year. You know, he's coming off of an injury. We'll have to see how that goes, you know, if that has any effect. But I would assume it probably won't. The biggest thing for him, Eddie, it's not as big of an effect in college as it is the NFL, but you know, he's not necessarily the biggest guy that you're going to see, you know, 5'11", 178, looking on K-State's its website. So not even 6 foot, not even 180 pounds. But you know what? I don't think that's going to have much of an impact on this upcoming year. You know, I think he's going to do it. I think he's going to do a nice job, and I think K-State's. I can't remember a group of corners that and defensive backs I've been this encouraged about in a while. And to be 100% honest, I feel like I'm just so used to K-State corners getting burned by Big 12 offenses ever mm-hmm. since right after 2010.
Yep.
I'm finally looking at a depth chart and thinking, okay, K-State's got some players. The last time I remember players like this is when you had Malone and Chapman and Garrett and that you know, that group there. K-State's has some good corners.
They have some good DBs. Well, yep.
But you know, it's but looking at the group as a collective unit, I think that they could do some things. Look, they gave up too many big plays last year. I'm not gonna shy away from it. I'm not gonna act like they didn't. There were too many breakdowns on the back end. They got to tighten that up. There's no doubt about it. You know, they got to improve from what they were last year. But what they did last year was encouraging. And if they can take another step, then they could end up being a real nice corner group. But when you look at those two seniors and those two freshmen, there is a lot that you can do with that group. Two seniors and two sophomores. There's a lot you can do with that group. And so that excites me.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Yeah, we'll definitely get more depth with that. But yeah, another guy that you did not mention in here that was huge on that defensive side of the ball was Jerron McPherson. Again, yep. He was fifth on a list in tackles, and he's one of those guys that can get up in your face and be a little physical with you as well. He made a play against KU, last year. So yeah, he's going to be pretty important as well. So yeah, you put a bow on it perfectly there. K-State's got some athletes coming back with that secondary led by A.J. Parker, Walter Neal. I mean, you lose Denzel Goosby there, but you got a talented you got Wayne Jones back, and I can't remember his name right now. I'm sure it'll come up. But yeah, there's some players back there in that secondary back there that have made plays but also have made a share of mistakes back there. So definitely we'll be definitely talking about that a little more as the summer begins. And I want to close with this. I don't know if we keep up with recruiting or not, Alex, but and this is going to be on the offensive side of the ball, though, but K-State gets, for their 2021 class, I had on my sheet just a while ago. There we go. RJ Garcia commits to K-State from Tampa. Yes, that's where Josh Youngblood is from. And apparently, Alex, RJ went to the same school as Josh Youngblood. So he's a three-star commit, and already, you know, we talked about a little bit about this last week, but here we go with these three-star guys getting recruited, and RJ Garcia. I mean, all of a sudden, you see these coaches now getting these connections down in Tampa, Kansas City. We touched on it, and we're going to continue to talk about it. This is a good get for K-State.
Look, it's all about building those pipelines. You're right, we did talk about it last week, Eddie. You know, that was the biggest question for me when Coach Kleiman came in was, you know, can he recruit in these areas? He's proven that he can. He's built a nice pipeline to Tampa, and that's huge. You know, it's huge to be able to have that and have that that connection and to be able to build them across the country, which it seems like they're doing it. If anybody wants to know when K-State lands a new recruit, all you got to do is follow Taylor Brandt on Twitter, because when he says, "Here come those Cavs," in a tweet, you're like, "Hey, who did they get now?" And then you go and you look and you check, and look, it's another good pickup for K-State. Going to be interesting to see what they can do with him in that 2021 class that's looking really nice right now. But you know what? I've been seeing a lot of tweets lately from Taylor Brad about the "Here come those Cats," and I'm thinking, well, they are out on the recruiting trail and they are doing something right. So they continue to grow that class that we referenced last week. The 2021 class continues to look really encouraging, and that's what we want. You know, just continue to build that class up, because the more you can build it up, you know, the more talent you can infuse in the program, the more depth you can infuse in the program, and the more, quite frankly, credibility with this coaching staff you infuse into the program. So every recruit that they're able to pile on is a big deal. And you know what? There's no such thing as yes, there is such thing as too many recruits, but there's no such thing as too many in the saying of you can never have too much talent is really what I'm getting at. And you know, that's something that you just can't have. So you continue to kind of stockpile the talent when you can get it, especially a team or a program that kind of needs a little infusion of talent. And when we see it coming in the recruiting classes, unlike anything we've seen in years past. So add it to the list. Let's see if they can scoop anybody up from Tampa. Eddie, I would not, say, well, that's it for Tampa, because there could be more coming. And the biggest thing, I'm going to touch on this quickly in recruiting, when people are talking about, well, why are those recruiting pipelines so important? Well, one, they're important, you know, so you can get guys like K-State have got, with Joshua Youngblood, and then the recent commit that they just got. But look, you know, when that school or that region gets the big four-star, the big five-star recruit, and K-State's built a pipeline there, you know what? Maybe K-State finds themselves in a recruiting battle that they may, quite frankly, not have a business being in because of what they've done with past recruits and the credibility that they've built. And then maybe they can compete with the SEC schools, the Big Ten schools, in recruiting guys like that when that huge gym comes up. The K-State field would be perfect for their program. And, you know, that's the key. And K-State hasn't been able to do that. We've seen some other schools in the Big 12 do it. We saw Baylor do it at times, where they were actually able to scoop some recruits from some SEC schools. I feel like I'm always referring to SEC schools, but it's just that's where they get that. So we've seen Baylor do it a little bit. We've also seen Texas and Oklahoma. Texas and Oklahoma are on level of the SEC schools when you look at recruiting. But we've seen Oklahoma State do a little bit of it. If K-State can jump in that game and be able to build some really strong pipelines and scoop up some players that they may not have any business being in recruiting battles with, that's just, I think, so important. That's just, those recruiting pipelines are so important, so you can scoop up and build up that talent like they're doing right now. And then when you get that big, huge gym, maybe you got a shot at landing them when you didn't think you would have 6 months ago or a year ago or whatever it might be. So, we could talk about that for days, as you know. But it's moral of the story, it's encouraging that K-State continues to do work on the recruiting trail. And part of the reason they are doing work on the recruiting trail is because they have more resources for recruiting now than they probably have ever had. So that's huge, and you're kind of seeing it pay off.
Mm-hmm, that is right, sir. Wow, another banging episode of the Purple Project Podcast. It's a wrap, Alex, my man.
A wrap.
So, where can everybody follow you on social media, Alex?
Follow me at two different places. You can follow me at my personal Twitter, which is at AFACHTEN. Once again, it's AFACHTEN. The personal Twitter is where you will get more of the hot takes, more of the unfiltered Alex. And if you want more professional Alex, you can also find me on my professional Twitter, which is @Alex_ITRC. Once again, it's @Alex_ITRC. If you want to see, PR Alex, the public relations Alex, so you can find him there. Both Twitters, I think, offer some really unique perspectives on me and what's going on. And follow me there. And would love to, if anybody ever wants to chat with me on Twitter about anything, feel free.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Eddie_EG3. Again, that's Eddie_EG3 as well. Alex, well done, sir. We're off to a good start. This episode will be out Tuesday for you guys. Folks, K-State Nation, be out on the lookout for it. Alex, let's do it again next week. Appreciate it.
I'm ready for it next week, man. Take it easy.
That's a wrap for another edition of the Purple Project Podcast. Make sure we're on Spotify for the Purple Project Podcast, and we're on Apple Podcast as well. Go check it out. Tell your K-State friends or your college friends or whoever you might run into. Yes, K-State has another podcast here in Manhattan, K-State, the Purple Project Podcast. K-State Nation, Wildcat fans all over the United States. Obviously, including here in the very own Manhattan Kansas, the Little Apple. Tell your friends. We're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify for right now. Starting off small, and we're hoping to grow from there. But for right now, we're putting a pin on this one, folks. It's a wrap for another edition of the Purple Project Podcast. For my co-host, Alex Eden, Eddie Greer, saying thanks again for listening to the Triple P this afternoon. And we'll talk to you guys again. And here come them cats.
Are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.